Hi, I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. On today's show, we're going to hear about LACMA's proposed second home. And artists at the museum take on the meaning of home.
The house itself is an exact or as close to exact replica of the Unabomber's house that was in Montana. After the Unabomber was captured, they actually picked up the cabin and they moved the cabin to the courthouse as forensic evidence of his insanity.
Daniel Joseph Martinez tells us about his installation called The House America Built. First up, though, let's talk about a hotel chain called American Idea. It comes to us from the Trump Organization, even as the president faces a legal challenge related to his Washington, D.C. hotel. The attorneys general of Maryland and D.C. have sued the president, alleging he's violating the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, which says no federal official should receive a gift or a fee from a foreign government. According to the suit, foreign dignitaries feel obliged to patronize Trump hotels. But none of this is stopping the Trump Organization from creating more hotels. And last week, they announced a new concept called American Idea. The Trump children were reportedly inspired by folks they met in small towns on the campaign trail. Now, their first franchisee is Chawla Hotels in Mississippi, which already owns Holiday Inns and Comfort Inns. They plan to retrofit three existing properties. So what is the American Idea brand? Why isn't Trump's name on it? And does it further the perceived conflicts of interest? We reached out to the Trump Organization and the Chawlas, but they didn't respond to our requests for interviews. Tim Colkins is a professor of marketing at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, and he's written about the Trump brand.
You know, Trump has always been a bit of a polarizing brand. You go back several years ago, and Trump stood for, I guess it was a particular type of luxury. It was success, it was achievement, it was a bit over the top in terms of the gaudiness of the whole thing, but it was clearly a brand all about opulence and luxury and all of that. It used to be that almost everything they did at that organization was branded Trump, and it was consistent, and they were sort of a similar positioning, and they just kept extending that brand to property after property after property. Now they've taken a 180-degree shift here. So first, they're moving away from using the Trump name anymore, which is curious, at least for some of these new properties. And then they've said, not only is this, are we not playing at the high now, now we're going to go down to this midstream price point. And I think you have to say that this reflects just the fundamental changes in the Trump brand. But from a business perspective, though, it's made it, I think, a much tougher brand to manage in many respects.
So last year they announced the launch of a Trump Organization brand that would not bear the Trump name, and that's called Scion. And then now they've just announced this other idea, which would be a string of hotels that they wouldn't themselves build, they would franchise, and it is called American Idea. And this has raised some very interesting questions.
So the first move they made was this new Scion brand, which is, I guess, an upscale, somewhat similar positioning to Trump, and yet clearly not branded Trump. There's a vague, I suppose, reference built into that, but they're managing it very, very separately.
The vague reference being to a Scion being the Scion of a family, as in the sons.
Exactly right. Now, this new move is yet another new brand that they're introducing. Again, it's a brand that's not branded Trump. And now they're moving a little bit to the lower end in terms of price point. So this is really quite a different move for them, because now this is not a premium property. This is more of a mainstream value kind of a property. And, you know, these, I think, are savvy business people, and they're trying to figure out how do we capitalize on what we have. And I think now what they're saying is, a lot of our resonance is not at the high end. It's more at the mainstream price point level, and it's in certain parts of the country. But it's, I have to say, though, it's so interesting there's no Trump branding on this anywhere, even a little bit of an endorsement. You know, they could have said perhaps from the Trump Organization or part of the Trump family, you know, but they didn't do any of that.
Now, this American Idea concept, what we've read is that in terms of the kind of theming of the hotels, they'll be There'll be American-made goods. There'll be old American artifacts like Coca-Cola machines. And then you add on to that the fact that when they rolled out the idea, they made a big fanfare about the first franchisees, who are these brothers originally from India. Their native country is India. They, I guess, represent the hardworking immigrant. The father had called Trump himself, cold called when he first came to this country, asking for help with launching his first hotel. Are they signalling something? Are they messaging, we're not anti-immigrant, look at us celebrate the hardworking immigrant story, and then we're going to have our old Coca-Cola signs and machines and what have you? I mean, that seems to be adding up to a picture of a kind of a theming.
Well, I think there's no question here that there's a lot of messaging. I mean, you could certainly say that this is a very symbolic gesture in terms of, right, the interesting ownership structure that they've got with the Indian immigrant and the whole idea of the Americana theme and made in America. It may be that what they're trying to do here is to really tap into the best aspects of that of the story. And perhaps what they're doing is tapping into some of the themes that led to Trump's election. And maybe that's where they're going on this one as well.
You said that those thematic moves could be seen as symbolic, but could they also be seen as cynical? One government ethics expert was interviewed by one of the papers, and she saw this as cashing in on the red states. She said the new chains raise many questions. Could we see at a kind of red state level the same as we've seen with the hotel in Washington, where the Kuwaiti embassy held an event at the, you know, converted post office building, Saudi Arabia, which, you know, Trump has come out in favor of over Qatar, has booked rooms at the hotel on more than one occasion. They've spent thousands of dollars at that hotel. Turkey held a state-sponsored event there last month. How can they unpack this kind of just convergence of these what should be unconnected roles?
I'm not sure that explains, you know, this new line, because, you know, there, let's just say hypothetically that was their goal, to just cash in on this presidency as quickly as possible. Well, then what you would do is you would really capitalize on the Trump name. You would think about events that would throw off a lot of cash very quickly. You would think about rebranding properties very quickly, and you would open up, I guess, lots of opportunities for people to try to curry favor through running their events. This move seems a little different, though, because this one is, you know, sort of a mid-scale property. On the surface, it seems like it is an effort to broaden out the portfolio, because they're a little nervous with how polarizing the Trump brand has become on the high end. And maybe this is an opportunity to try to balance things in the portfolio going forward.
Lastly, you wrote about the Trump brand back in January as Trump was about to enter the White House. And at that point, you offered your readers some investment advice. You said, if you think he'll be successful, you should buy a condo in one of his properties. Prices are down. If he succeeds, they'll snap back over the next 4 years on the strength of the brand. Okay, would you recommend people to invest in these hotels?
Well, I will, especially for Trump-branded properties, I will stick with my advice. And, you know, if you think that things are going to settle down and he's going to finish up his term as presidency with a track record of success and a brand that people aspire to and want to be part of, then sure, you know, and buy a condo in one of the Trump properties, and that would probably perform very well. Right now, though, I would say I'm not trying to be rushing to put my money down on the deposit, given how things are going so far.
That's Tim Colkins. He's professor of marketing at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Back to Los Angeles and a move into South LA by the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. As you've likely heard, LACMA's Wilshire Boulevard complex is on the brink of a major transformation. Four of its buildings are said to be falling apart and are set to be demolished. Taking their place will be a radically different design by Swiss architect Peter Zumthor. He proposes a sandy-coloured concrete and glass building raised above the park and meandering across Wilshire Boulevard. He described his vision at a recent presentation at LACMA, but he put the emphasis on the atmospherics.
This is my dream. I would like to make a space which has this atmosphere of this so strong, and most of all has this beautiful light from the side.
The building is currently projected to cost $650 million, and LACMA CEO Michael Govan has raised half of that. But even as he works to raise the rest, he has his eyes on other building projects.
This is an incredible space, an oasis, has huge potential to, change hearts and minds about spending time outdoors and looking at art.
Last week, Michael Govan addressed a meeting of the board of the Department of Recreation and Parks. The topic was a building on a site in South LA near the intersection of Slauson and Avalon, a former bus maintenance and storage facility in South LA Wetlands Park. The building dates back to 1911. It has sat empty for 30 years, and Govan has plans to lease it for the next 35.
It turns out there are almost 10,000 school kids within walking distance. So when you think about where in the world would you even do that, this is a really amazing place.
The Department of Rec and Parks acquired the site from Metro 8 years ago and has been looking for an angel to take over the rehab and maintenance of the 84,000-square-foot building. So they voted with enthusiasm to move forward with negotiations on a lease of occupation. Lynn Alvarez is vice president of the board.
This is very exciting to have this partnership. We've done such an amazing job with the wetlands there. The department has done an amazing job. Very proud of our staff and their ability to move swiftly and be creative. And I think this will really be a cap to be able to finally have a useful use for that building that the community will really cherish for years to come.
Swiftly is a key word here. LACMA staffers saw the building earlier this year and they sped into action. Why? Could it be connected to the Miracle Mile makeover that's scheduled to begin in 2019? After the board meeting, we sat down with Michael Govan.
LACMA has been spending years and years and years reaching out to various communities of Los Angeles. We're working at Compton, North Hollywood, and other spaces. And we've been working with Charles White Elementary School on MacArthur Park for years now with an exhibition space in what used to be the former Otis College Art Gallery. And with a grant from LA County Quality and Productivity, that will be open to the public in the fall. So we'll have a small branch of LACMA in collaboration with the elementary school with works from the collection and artists' works. So what you're talking about is part of a much larger vision to not just bring people to the Los Angeles County Museum of Art on Wilshire Boulevard, but to put Los Angeles County Museum of Art into communities in Los Angeles County. This has been discussed for a long time. We've literally been practicing, because you have to practice. It's hard work. It's not what we're naturally designed to do. Museums are usually a box, and people come into the box and see the art and leave. So this event is a first step, which is to say that there's a potential lease of that facility long-term for us to renovate the building for program space and for art exhibitions of the collections of exhibitions as we would normally program a building here on Wilshire Boulevard.
Programming, exhibitions, also storage is one of the uses of this building to store art from the main building?
Yes, there would be storage in the building, and part of my dream is not to have storage. That's unrealistic, but to have less storage because artworks are being utilized in other places in LA. A good example of that is right now you can travel to Vincent Price Art Museum at East Los Angeles College to see beautiful Chinese ceramics from our collection that were otherwise in storage. And we don't utilize our collections in museums as well as we could.
This is unfolding at the very same time as the main LACMA site is about to partially close, staff are about to be moved out, and the demolition process is due to start, is it not, to prepare for the pending Zumtor makeover. So are the two connected in as much as people and artworks are going to have to move out of this site?
Yes, I think it's timed as such. We've been looking for years to think about spaces that we could get up and running during this time. Just makes sense because we're reducing the exhibition space here on Wilshire Boulevard. So that is all timed properly. People say, oh, that's a lot to take on at once. But actually, when you're in construction mode and a lot of your staff and consultants are all working on HVAC and seismic issues and renovation, that's actually the best time to do it because the museum is in building mode throughout. So it is timed for that.
You're listening to DNA. I'm Frances Anderton, and we're speaking with LACMA CEO Michael Govan about his museum's interest in taking over an old bus facility in South LA. The space brings to mind a couple of East Coast art institutions that Govan has been involved with in the past, Deer Beacon and Mass MoCA, both in former factories.
I always used to say I'm a factory hunter, because for almost three decades, I've spent time since the 1980s, partly inspired by an artist who, you know, Donald Judd in those days, who said, you know, there's so many empty buildings. Why do we always build new? And he didn't mean like failing museum buildings, leaking museum buildings like ours now. He meant
the next question was going to be, well, no, then why aren't. Not?
But he, like most of us, felt that industrial buildings, factories, modular buildings that have a simple and unpretentious but stately presence are some of the very best environments.
You, I'm sure, have been observing that right now, communities in LA, most famously, I guess, Boyle Heights, have become rather skeptical of sort of the art community moving into their neighborhoods. They were seeing art as a bearer of gentrification in its wake. I'm sure that's something you're aware of. So what do you say to people who might get nervous that you go into that corner of South LA and the property values go up around it? And
well, no, those are absolutely real issues. We're extremely sensitive to that. And I've listened to all of the discussions in Boyle Heights. But that doesn't mean you stop making investments in communities. The conclusion would not be, do not send art to communities. The conclusion of that is, one, talk to people first. You know, this is just a baby step where there's no formal plan now. That's what gets evolved. I've been in conferences and discussions about issues like the Boyle Heights issue. Someone said very articulately at one conference, gentrification is something that is done to you. Revitalization is something that's done with you. And by the way, art museums are a little different than commercial activities, just in the sense that we already have a giant workforce of educators, of community relations staff. We come fully involved. And as I said, if we can make some of these or similar projects work, it's based on this idea of practice. We're listening and learning and going slowly, because that's the issue. You can't just land somewhere and make a decision. So all I'm saying is that those are real issues. The answer is not, okay, so don't send art anywhere. Who would conclude that? The question is how you listen.
You said you're going to need support from partners. What kind of partners? Is that private donors? Is it the city, the county? And is this to pay for the costs of overhauling this South LA project and other sites for the protection of the artworks, the security? What? Tell us about that piece of it.
Yeah, it's just a way of saying I need to raise more money. it's not that complicated.
Aren't you still raising money for the Zumto project? Do you ever stop raising money, Michael?
Well, there is money in the world. I always think that it's an abstraction. The question is, what's worth doing? And institutions are vehicles, I think, for people to feel confident to give money. So I am eternally optimistic that Los Angeles, the whole area, is in a state of transformation constantly. But the arts now play a central role in that transformation.
This South LA project seems to make perfect sense in so many ways that you've laid out. But it does, however, sort of beg the question of to what extent is it also solving some challenges that have been the byproduct of the Zumtor design, which is, as I understand it, one that won't have too much space for storage, won't have too much space for even staff facilities. Is that correct? So to what extent is this going out into the neighborhood also a means to kind of solve a problem that's emerged out of designing this building?
It's not emerged out of designing this building. It's just a trend. There's no reason to build high-quality, climate-controlled space at the level we're building it with as any new museum. Just that is, you can build offices next door for less, or storage next door, but also real estate prices. It's also the sense of highest and best use. This is a constrained public park. Why do you want a lot of it used for dark storage? That's a real waste of space. when you have a public that wants to experience as much of the outdoors and art as you can. So it makes sense to just move it off. But yes, so that starts you on a course. Do you put it in a dark space somewhere, or do you think about redistributing it in new ways? So it's really just an opportunity to think. I don't have the whole thing mapped out. It's about this. That's the wonderful thing about LA. It's a continual process of exploration and experimentation and thinking how we can find out what works. And we found out actually in our work recently that being in these communities, it's not just what we bring to the communities, it's what the communities bring to us. We have been enriched by our experiences and working with communities already all across Los Angeles County, and I think it will only be more in the future.
That's LACMA CEO Michael Govan. I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. He was telling us about the museum's plans to lease a former Metro bus facility in South LA Wetlands Park. Meanwhile, though, the museum still has art to think about. After this break, we'll look at its new show about the meaning of home. Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. Now, what does home mean to you? It may mean a house, as in the physical space you live in, or could it be something more emotional or political? A new show at LACMA explores these various ideas of home. It's the kickoff exhibition for Pacific Standard Time LALA. That's the Getty-sponsored citywide celebration of Latin American art, unfolding over the next few months. The LACMA show is called Home, so different, so appealing. Pilar Tompkins-Rivas is the co-curator.
Well, this exhibition looks at the theme of home through U.S. Latino and Latin American art from the late 1950s to the present. We're looking at the ways that in which artists are investigating this very deceptively simple idea to really talk about broader concerns within the hemisphere that range from sociopolitical issues to the private domestic space.
This show, one's not going to walk in and see a bunch of models of houses. That's not what this show is.
Well, home is a concept that can be traced from the family to the neighborhood to the nation state and larger questions of how do we talk about homeland. And it also has its counterpart, which is non-home or people that are displaced. We know that home is not a fixed idea. It's something that we carry within us and it's related to the people that we love, but it's also something that that can shift or change. And it can represent instability. Or you can think about it in terms of the American dream and the idea of home ownership as this ideal that we strive towards. And then that can also in and of itself be a home that is slippery. It's also something that can be a model that is exported to other parts of the world. So we have works in the exhibitions that do deal with the planning models that have been developed in the United States and in some cases specifically in Southern California that connect to ideas for planning that have been exported to Mexico or even to the West Bank.
Pilar Tompkins-Rivas is the co-curator of the LACMA exhibition Home, So Different, So Appealing. The West Bank piece Rivas mentioned marks the entrance to the exhibition, and it's by an artist called Daniel Joseph Martinez. He's built two large aluminum wheels around which are clear vacuform panels, and carved into those panels are the names of 22 settlements in the West Bank that were modelled on planned communities developed in Irvine, California.
The idea is using architecture as a weapon. In 1940s, there was an experiment that took place in Irvine, Washington, D.C., and Houston. And these were the first cities that built tract housing. Tract housing then developed to the suburbs. Suburbs then developed into gated communities. What the Israelis did, which was quite brilliant, is they adopted the same technology in terms of the outline, and they militarized the architecture. The settlements are not only places that people live, but they are tools by which to occupy land and protect themselves simultaneously.
Martinez is also creator of another large-scale provocative installation. It's a brightly painted wooden cabin, and it's called The House America Built.
The house itself, you should understand, is an exact or as close to exact replica of the Unabomber's house that was in Montana. After the Unabomber was captured, they actually picked up the cabin and they moved the cabin to the courthouse as forensic evidence of his insanity.
You mean that was the evidence, the fact of him living in this tiny cabin?
It was forensic evidence because the way he lived in the cabin and living in the middle of the wilderness, there was a suggestion that the only kind of person that would do this would be someone who was mentally imbalanced. So it's also important to recognize and remember that Theodore Kaczynski was a genius. He was at the one quarter percent of theoretical mathematicians graduating from Harvard. When they found him inside of the cabin, there were about 300 volumes of books. The 300 books was essentially the canonical history of Western civilization, the major text that anyone would read if one was reading, trying to learn on this. But he was particularly influenced by one writer, was Henry Thoreau. Henry Thoreau wrote a very important book called Walden's Pond at Walden's Pond, right? Well, this cabin was an exact copy of Thoreau's cabin at Walden's Pond. So if the logic is true that the cabin is a representation of Kaczynski's insanity, it is equally true that Thoreau was insane for living in the same kind of cabin at Walden's Pond, which is just a fantastic twist on this.
Ted Kaczynski, known as the Unabomber, lived in isolation for many years, sending out bombs and letters to scientists in protest of their work. Martinez built a replica of his cabin in 2004. Every time it's displayed, he repaints it in the seasonal colours recommended by Martha Stewart Living magazine. In this iteration, it's in variations of soft purple, blue and yellow. On one side, these colours are painted in a camouflage pattern.
The way the cabin is painted represents the other half of this, of another type of ideology with Martha Stewart. So maybe I should tell you that Martha Stewart and Theodore Kaczynski are both the same age. They both went to the best Ivy League schools you could possibly go to in the United States. They both are Polish-American. They both represent at the exact same moment a shift in thinking about a direction by which to move a particular way of being in the world. So Kaczynski studies math, but then becomes an American terrorist. A homegrown terrorist in the United States, one that was unable to be caught, right? Martha Stewart becomes a hyper-capitalist, and she sells a lifestyle. She sells a lifestyle that is a complete illusion. It's a fiction. Marshmallows and doilies and cupcakes, and she tells us how we should live. She tells us what we should buy. She tells us what colors we should paint our houses with, our interior rooms. The cabin itself and the colors and what it represents it's a critique of American culture. They're both false representations.
Right, but when we think of both of them, we don't just think of them, we think of how they lived and the shell they chose to put up around themselves.
Her attempt is to change our interpretation of what home is on the domestic level. His is attempt to change home in relation to how we see ourselves as a species.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
That's Daniel Joseph Martinez. His piece is part of a show at LACMA called Home, So Different, So Appealing. It's the kickoff show for Pacific Standard Time, LALA. I'm Frances Anderton. That's it for today's DNA. Avishai Artsy is the show's producer. Ray Guana mixed this episode. Special thanks to Jason Groman. And thank you very much for listening.